All right, we're in part two on the resurrection of Jesus. And last time I went through a sequence of events that, in my opinion, will explain all the so-called apparent contradictions in the account of the resurrection and how that, Jesus showed himself to various people. Now, one thing you may have noticed last week is that the only people who actually saw Jesus alive, that he showed himself to, up to this point, were all women. Right? He showed himself first to Mary Magdalene, then he showed himself to the other women who were returning from the empty tomb. And now others had seen, Peter and John had seen the empty tomb, but they didn't see any angels. The other women saw the angels first, and then they met Jesus on their way to tell the disciples. So it's fascinating because in the Jewish culture, women are considered of less reliable testimony than men. Now, I'm not saying that that ought to be the case. I'm just saying that's just the way it was in that culture. And so what we find is that Jesus kind of flipped that upside down by, instead of first showing himself to the men and then showing himself to the women as sort of an afterthought, he showed himself to the women first, and then later he showed himself to the men. And then what we find out is when he did show himself to the men, he got all over their case because they didn't believe the women. isn't that pretty remarkable? Jesus was very countercultural in a lot of the things that he did, and I think that's just one of those ways in which he was that way. Let's go to Matthew. Let's pick up the narrative now. We left off last time. Let me just give you a brief run through of the events, okay, in order. So Jesus, Mary Magdalene and the other women set out from Jerusalem to go to the tomb to bring spices to anoint the body of Jesus. During that trek, Mary Magdalene runs on ahead and arrives at the tomb much earlier than the rest of the women. She gets there. How do we know that? How do we know that she got there? She didn't arrive with the other women. How do we know that? Okay, you don't know. Because one account says that Mary Magdalene arrived while it was still dark. And the other account in Mark says that the women arrived when the sun had arisen, had come up. Okay? So there's clearly a time difference between their arrival, but there is no time difference in their departure. They all departed at the same time. So that's how we know that Mary Magdalene ran on ahead. She gets to the tomb. She sees that the tomb is empty and that the stone is rolled away. She doesn't see any angels yet. She runs back to where Peter and John are, which must have been fairly close to where the tomb was, where they were staying. She tells them, they run to the tomb. John outruns Peter, but he doesn't go in. Peter then goes in, and he sees the clothes laying by themselves. John observes, and the text specifically says that John believed. He believed that Jesus was resurrected simply by seeing the empty tomb and the clothes wrapped by themselves. Then Peter and John leave and they go and they start heading back to Jerusalem where the other disciples were staying. Well, in the meantime, Mary Magdalene stays behind at the tomb, and this is when she sees the angel. One of the angels shows himself to her, and then she goes outside the tomb. She turns around and she sees another person outside the tomb, not recognizing him. She thinks he's the gardener. And she says, if you've taken his body away, tell me where, and so forth, and I'll go and attend to that. And that's when Jesus revealed himself to Mary. So Mary, as soon as that happens, she's tearing off, heading back to Jerusalem to where the disciples are staying, which is a good ways off. In the meantime, the other women arrive. They see the angels, but they don't see Jesus there. And they see the empty tomb, and so the angels tell them to go to the other disciples and tell them as well. So they head off, heading that way as well. to Jerusalem. And then immediately after that, it says that Jesus appeared to the women on the way. And then he told them to, you know, go tell his disciples. So they're heading back to Jerusalem. So what happens? Then the women, Mary Magdalene, I forgot to say that Peter and John, when they left the tomb, they went back to Jerusalem also. So Peter and John get there first. Then Mary Magdalene's right behind them. And then the other women are right behind her. So Peter, Mary Magdalene arrives, and she's telling them, Peter's now there with the rest of the disciples, that Jesus is risen and she's seen him. Then the other women come, and they say the same thing. And what does Peter and the others, what does it say? It said they didn't believe, right? And then Peter again takes off and heads to the tomb to check a second time, maybe to see the angel. Or maybe he thought, well, if the women are not hallucinating, maybe he'll see Jesus there like they did. So he heads back there. Now, that's where the account left off last week. Now, let's pick it up in Matthew chapter 28. Matthew gives us an account of the guards. You may remember we talked earlier about how Jewish leadership had the Romans station a guard at the tomb. And so Matthew's account tells us that when the angel appeared to roll away the stone, that the guards, in verse 4, Matthew 28:4, it says, the guards shook for fear of him and became like dead men. So they basically fainted, I suppose. Well, here's what happened with the guards. It tells us a little later on in Matthew. It says in verse 11, it says, now while they were going, that is, the women were leaving the tomb, it says, behold, some of the guards came to the city and reported to the chief priests all the things that had happened. When they had assembled with the elders and consulted together, they gave a large sum of money to the soldiers, saying, tell them his disciples came at night and stole him away while we slept. And if this comes to the governor's ears, we will appease him and make you secure. So they took the money and did as they were instructed. And this saying is commonly reported among the Jews until this day. Now, that's pretty remarkable if you think about it. The saying, Matthew says this saying was commonly reported. That is, the disciples came during the night and stole the body of Jesus while the guards were asleep. But you've got two problems with that. One, the guards cannot sleep. All right? Number two, the tomb was sealed with a Roman seal, and you can't fix a seal once it's broken. Right? So there's a big problem with their story. But anyway, that was the story that they concocted. All right. Now, let's see what happens next. Let's go to Mark chapter 16. And I want to point out something that only Mark mentions. Yeah. If it got reported back to him.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. All right, so in Mark chapter 16, verse 7, I want to point out something that Jesus said. Hang on one second. Jesus said to the women, when he appeared to the women. All right, now that's recorded in Matthew, but Mark tells us something that one detail that's left out of Matthew. Look at what Jesus said to them. Verse 7. But go tell his disciples. I'm sorry, this is the angel speaking, isn't it? Yes, it's the angel, sorry, while the women were still at the tomb. But go tell his disciples and Peter. Notice that Peter was singled out. Now, Peter was one of his disciples. So why not just say, tell his disciples? That's what the other accounts say. Yeah, but there's a reason why Peter's being singled out amongst all of the disciples, not just him and John. All right, Peter's being singled out amongst all the disciples. They were told, go tell the disciples and Peter, or particularly Peter. All right, make sure you tell Peter. All right. Anybody want to take a guess at why the instructions were to tell them and make sure that Peter got the message? Yes.
Two possibilities.
Okay.
He was in a different physical location.
Okay.
I don't think that's the answer,
but go ahead.
I think he was wanting to make sure that Peter was comforted in the face of his denial.
Didn't Jesus and Peter have some unfinished business? Yeah. Because Peter, among all of his disciples, Peter is the one who denied him. Right? Jesus said to Peter, you know, that the night before the crucifixion, that Peter was going to deny him three times. And Peter kept denying, no, I'll never deny you, Lord. But Jesus kept saying, no, you're going to deny me. And then what did he do? He denied him. Now, Jesus and Peter didn't have a chance to talk after that, because Jesus was carted off to trial before Pilate, and then he was crucified. And so Peter was, of all the disciples, I mean, all of them were feeling badly, all right? All of them were feeling badly that the one that they believed to be the Messiah, you know, had been killed, and they were in a state of confusion. But Peter especially, he was feeling really, really badly because he denied him, and he didn't stand with him when it was that critical moment, and Peter was in a state of more than grief for Jesus' death. Peter was even beyond that. He was even in a state of grief because of his own behavior in denying Christ. And so this kind of gives you a little sense that you know, Jesus knew that he had some unfinished business with Peter, and the instructions of the angels made it clear that Jesus wanted to see Peter especially. And you know, when you look at, if you look at Paul's account of, or the list of those who saw Christ after he was raised from the dead. In fact, let's just look at that for just a moment. Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 15. It's very revealing the way that Paul lists these. You can kind of infer some things from it. He starts out by, verse 3, "For I delivered to you, first of all, that which I received, that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, that he was buried, that he rose the third day according to the Scriptures, and that he was seen." Now notice the list of those who saw him. "He was seen by Cephas." Now Cephas, as I pointed out before, is the Aramaic name of Peter. Cephas in Aramaic means a stone. Petros, which is Peter in Greek, means a stone. It's the same name, just in a different language. Okay, so Cephas is Peter. So when Paul's listing those eyewitnesses, he doesn't mention Mary Magdalene. He doesn't mention any of the women at all. He just says he was seen by Cephas, and he lists him first. And then he says, and then by the 12, that is the whole group of disciples. After that, he was seen by over 500 brethren at once, of whom the greater part remain to the present, and some have fallen asleep. After that, he was seen by James. Then by all the apostles, again, and then last of all, he was seen by me, Paul says. So look at the list and look at the order of the list. What does that imply to you? Who among the men saw Jesus first?
Jesus.
Peter. Right? That's what it implies. Now, do the gospel accounts verify that? That's what we're going to find out. All right, let's look at... let's look at Luke chapter 24. Now, you may remember this is when the women came back, reported, and then Peter jumped up immediately and he ran by himself to the tomb the second time. That's in Luke 24:12. We'll read that. It says, "Peter arose and ran into the tomb, and stooping down, he saw the linen clothes lying by themselves, and he departed, marveling to himself at what had happened." Now look at verse 13. In Luke's account, he then begins to talk about these two disciples on the road to Emmaus. Is there any indication that Peter saw Jesus here?
No.
when he went to the tomb. No, it says he left wondering what had happened. So he obviously didn't see him, at least not at the tomb. Verse 13. Now, we're going to talk about the two disciples on the road to Emmaus. Now, this account is actually also in Mark, but Mark's account is very, very, very short. All right, it's like only like two verses. All right. So Luke's account is the fuller version, so we'll look at that one. Now, behold, two of them were traveling that same day to the village called Emmaus, which was 7 miles from Jerusalem. And they walked together, and they talked together of these things which had happened. So it was, while they conversed and reasoned, that Jesus himself drew near and went with them. I suppose, you know, you got, when you're walking along the road, sometimes, you know, somebody, you guys, you know, if you do any walking on paths or anything like that, you know, somebody will come up behind you, right? Walking a little faster than you. And they might come up behind you. And so that's probably what happened here. It says, Jesus drew near and went with them. Now notice it says here in verse 16, it says, their eyes were restrained so that they did not know him. That is, they were not able to recognize him. Now, Mark's account says he appeared to them in a different form. Now, I don't think those are conflicting statements. This is how he appeared, as though he was in a different form, or he appeared maybe with different features than they normally would have recognized him. So they knew he was a man and he was walking with them, but they didn't. His appearance to them was sufficiently different that they did not recognize him. All right, he just looked like another man. All right, so it says they did not know him. Verse 17, and he said to them, what kind of conversation is this that you have with one another as you walk and are sad? Then the one whose name was Cleophas, and by the way, Cleophas, we find out from John 19, was the husband of Mary, one of the Marys that was at the cross, and that probably was one of the Marys that was maybe the mother of James, I believe, who accompanied the women. So this is her husband. Anyway, it says, then the one whose name was Cleophas answered and said to him, are you only a stranger in Jerusalem, and have you not known the things which happened here in these days? And he said to them, what things? So they said to him, the things concerning Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and the people, how the chief priests and our rulers, did you notice they said he was a prophet, but they didn't say he was the Messiah? Did you notice that? Why do you think that is? Was he? Well, first of all, was he a prophet? Was Jesus a prophet?
Yes.
But he was much more than a prophet because he was the Son of God, right? Peter made that confession earlier. He was the Messiah, but they don't say that here. They use the word prophet. And, you know, sometimes you can read a little bit between the lines, but I think they were having some doubts about whether he was really the Messiah or not. They knew for sure he was a prophet. But see, what had the Jews done to the prophets before? They killed the prophets, right? They killed Isaiah. They killed Zechariah. They killed, in fact, Jesus had talked about how that they had killed the prophets. And here, so they're kind of bringing Jesus to the level of a prophet, but they're not actually confessing that he's the Christ, the Son of God. And I think that's because their faith had been shaken right to its very foundation. That's my opinion, all right?
Well, they also didn't understand the Messiah's resurrection.
Right, as we will see in a few moments as we go through the dialogue here, right? They didn't understand that the Messiah was to be crucified and raised again from the dead, according to the scriptures, but Jesus will explain that to them. All right, verse 20. And how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we were hoping, notice that, we were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Okay, so they knew definitely that he was a prophet, and they were hoping that he was the Messiah. Right? Now, that, again, shows that this event had really shaken their faith that he was the Messiah to the core. We were hoping that it was him, but look what happened to him. See, that's essentially what they're saying. Indeed, besides all this, today is the third day since these things happened. Now, Today is the third day. What does that tell you about when the crucifixion was? This is Sunday, and it's probably getting, you know, around the middle of the day after his resurrection. And they said, this is the third day since he was crucified. So when was he crucified?
Friday.
On Friday. Yeah. That completely undermines those who claim he was crucified on a Wednesday or something like that. But anyway, that's a topic for another day. Verse 22. Yes, the certain women of our company who arrived at the tomb early astonished us when they did not find his body and came saying that they also had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. And certain of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see. Now that was Peter and John. Then he said to them, O foolish ones and slow of heart, to believe in all that the prophets have spoken. Ought not the Christ to have suffered these things and to enter into his glory? Now, what is he saying? He's saying you haven't studied the prophets sufficiently. You haven't understood what the prophets have said sufficiently. So what does he do? He says, beginning at Moses and all the prophets, which is pretty much the whole Old Testament, except maybe some of the poetic books, he expounded to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. Now, to me, that one verse tells us that Jesus gave them a big, long exposition of a whole bunch of Old Testament passages of Scripture. Which passages of Scripture do you suppose Jesus explained to them from Moses and the prophets? Give me a guess. Excuse me, go ahead, Steve. What did you say? Good. Isaiah 53, because that was one of the primary passages that talked about his death. All right, what else?
Psalm, okay,
good. Both of you are right. Psalm 22 is also about his death, but Psalm 2 is about his resurrection or his kingdom, right? His ultimate kingdom. What else? Psalm 16 talks about his resurrection. All right, now, it says he expounded all the things concerning himself. So it had, what he did is he took all the prophetic scriptures that talk about his birth, that talk about his, being in the form of man, talk about him being rejected by the Jewish nation, that talk about him being executed by them, talk about his resurrection, that talk about his ascension to heaven. Which passage in the Old Testament talks about his ascension to heaven? Psalm 110, where the Father says, sit at my right hand till I make your enemies your footstool. I mean, that's quoted all throughout the New Testament as well. And then, of course, his coming kingdom and so forth. So what he showed them was that their messianic hope should not only be focused in the coming of the kingdom, which is what they were focused on, but it was necessary for the Messiah to also undergo all these other things that were prophesied throughout the prophets as well. I wish they had given us a written account of Jesus' entire dialogue or monologue while he expounded all of these scriptures to them. Wouldn't that be awesome if that was included in Luke's gospel? But it's not. So, anyway. All right, verse 28. Then they drew near to the village where they were going, and he indicated that he would have gone farther. But they constrained him, saying, abide with us, for it is toward evening, and the day is far spent. Now, listen to this. It's getting late in the afternoon. It's not night yet. He said it's toward evening. So it might be, 4 o'clock in the afternoon or so. It's not quite time for sunset, but it's getting later in the evening. And when you're walking along a road, and you're going from town to town, you don't just say, oh, you know what? The sun's about to go down. Let's just stop here because you might be in the middle of nowhere. and there's no place to stay, right? So what do you typically do? You go to as far as you can go on your journey to where you come to a town, and if you can't make it to the next town before it gets dark, then you stop and you stay there, right? And that's essentially what they were doing. Now, how far away was this town from Jerusalem? We read it earlier. Excuse me?
7 miles.
7 miles, all right? It's actually about 7.8 miles. Almost 8 miles from Jerusalem. How long does it take to walk 8 miles?
A couple hours?
All right. So, well, maybe two and a half hours or so, maybe three, depending on how fast you're walking. All right, so what time do you think they left? Maybe a little after lunch, right? Probably a little after noon they left to go on this walk, all right? So now they stop for dinner, for supper. All right, where was I? What verse?
29.
But they constrained him, saying, "Abide with us, for it is toward evening, and the day is far spent." And he went to stay with them. Now it came to pass, as they sat at the table. Now, probably by now, they're having dinner. So it's probably pretty close to sunset now, right? All right. That he took bread, blessed it, and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they knew him. And he vanished from their sight. Now, some people think the word "vanish" there means he, you know, like a puff of smoke, you know, he disappeared. It's not what it means. All right, keep in mind, it simply means that he was gone. He left. All right, now, could he have left without them observing him leave? Yeah, easily, because after all, their eyes had been, his identity had been withheld from their eyes. Right? If you're looking for the Greek word, Stephen, is that what you're doing? It's the word epiphany, which means to appear, but to be apparent with the negative particle, in front of it. Okay, so he became unapparent to them, is what it says. All right. Anyway, let's continue reading. Verse 32. They said to one another, "Did not our heart burn within us while he talked with us on the road and while he opened the scriptures to us?" So they arose that very hour and returned to Jerusalem. Wow. Now, do you think they were walking back to Jerusalem, the 7.8 miles, at a nice slow clip like they were when they were coming to Emmaus? You think so? No, because by the time they got back to Jerusalem, the other disciples were still there, gathered together, basically having dinner, or had been having dinner. That tells me that they were running like their pants were on fire. All right? Anyway, so they rose up that very hour and returned to Jerusalem and found the 11 and those who were with them gathered together, saying, quote, "The Lord is risen indeed," and notice this phrase right here, "and has appeared to Simon." Has appeared, past tense, to Simon. Now, if you look at different commentaries, they have different ideas of what's going on here. Some think that Simon or Peter was one of the two disciples on the road to Emmaus, and that when it says, "The Lord is risen indeed and has appeared to Simon," that it's the two disciples speaking. Other commentators say no, it was the others, the 11 that they came to, that said that to them. And really, from the Greek text, it's impossible to determine whether it's talking about the two disciples making this statement or whether it's talking about the 11 making the statement. All right, it's not possible to determine that. It's just kind of a contextual thing. In my opinion, Simon was not one of the ones who was on the road to Emmaus, but when the two disciples reported back to the 11 that they had seen Jesus, that the 11 responded back to them and said, "Yes, we know, because he's appeared to Simon." That is to Peter. All right. So now, If that's the case, and they're saying he has already appeared to Simon, who did he appear to first? Did he appear to the two on the road to Emmaus first, or did he appear to Simon Peter first? I mean, because these are, you know, maybe almost simultaneous events. He appeared over here, and then he appeared over there. Or at least before they got to Emmaus, he had appeared to Peter, maybe. Which one do you think was first? And why? Walter says Peter. Why Peter?
Peter is a relationship with the deacon. Peter had denied him. Peter.
But that doesn't mean he would appear to him first. He appeared to the women before he appeared to Peter.
That's true. I'm looking at Luke at the when they were having the Last Supper. You know, it says Simon, Simon, indeed Satan has sifted you for wheat that he may sift you as wheat. He says, I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail, and when you have returned to me, strengthen your brother. It seems as if he was putting Peter in a position to be the one to strengthen his brother and to do that.
Yeah, but they weren't all in the same place. You got two guys on the road to Emmaus over here, and Peter is over here in Jerusalem.
Christ could have appeared to Peter after he appeared to the two on the road to Emmaus, because it was at least another, you know, let's say they jogged back.
He might, when he left them at Emmaus, he might have beat them back to Jerusalem.
Peter was in that vicinity.
Okay, that's a possibility, but I think you're wrong. And Diane had her hand up, but she doesn't want to answer now.
Yeah.
I think Jesus had appeared to Peter, and then immediately after that, he caught up with the other two on their walk to Emmaus. Why do I think it happened that way and not the other way around? Because if it was those two who had seen him first, when Paul gave the listing of those who had seen him and in what order, he would have put them first and then Peter, or he may not even have mentioned Peter. But when Paul lists the eyewitnesses, and remember, when Paul's listing those eyewitnesses, he only lists the men. He doesn't list the women, even though they saw him first. He only lists the men. What does that imply? That their testimony is more weighty, more credible, at least to the people that he was writing to, right? And you also have to understand that in a Jewish way of thinking, whenever you give a list of names, you always do it in a sequence of importance, all right? And when he gives that list, he actually uses terminology that talk about a sequence. He says, you know, he appeared to Simon and then, meaning afterwards to the 11, and then to over 500 brethren at once. And after that, he was seen by James. And then last of all, he was seen by me. So he's using terminology that refers to sequence. So he's talking about the sequence in which credible witnesses could verify that, and those credible witnesses were men, and sorry, ladies, but that's just the way their culture was. That credible witnesses could testify to the fact, all right? So he's doing it in an order in which that Jesus appeared to them. Now, if you're going to give a list of people who saw Jesus at his resurrection, and you're doing it as a sequential list, if these men had seen Jesus before Peter did, there's absolutely no question that Paul would have listed them first, because the first male eyewitness was the most important eyewitness in their way of thinking. All right? You guys understand that? So Peter clearly saw Jesus first of the men. There's no doubt about it. And I think probably, you remember what happened, because when in Luke's account, when it talks about Peter getting up after hearing the women and running back to the tomb, and then it says he saw that, you know, the tomb was empty again, and then it says he went away wondering. And then Luke's narrative goes to talk about the two on the road to Emmaus and what happened with them. In fact, there are some commentaries that say that Luke very well, or probably, was one of the two that were walking on the road to the Emmaus. He names the other person, but he doesn't name the second one. And it was common. John does that too. When he writes his gospel, he doesn't put his own name in it. He just kind of, in a roundabout way, refers to himself. You know, it's sort of a way of being humble, I guess. So very, very likely it was Luke and Cleophas that were the two who were on their way. So why would Luke give this big lengthy account of these two men encountering Jesus and the long conversation that they had, while you don't see it in Matthew, you don't see it in John, and Mark only devotes two verses to it? Why would Luke give a very full account? Probably he was there. He heard all that was said. He observed everything. All right, that's most likely what happened. But these two are not listed in Paul's account, and probably because he has sufficient weighty testimony. Luke and Cleophas were not part of the chosen disciples that Jesus had. They were his followers, but they weren't the ones that Jesus chose and appointed. So when Paul is going to list those men who had seen him, he lists Peter first because he appeared to Peter. And then he says, and then to the 11, that is the group of the other disciples. And then he says, then to 500 brethren all at once. And then James saw him alone as well. All right? So, yes.
I'm sorry, just a possible point. Could he have placed Peter at the beginning of that list because there was this division between the main apostle to the Jews versus to the Gentiles?
Well, what would be his reasoning?
I don't know. So, I mean, if you look at kind of a hierarchy or an organizational chart, you've got Paul as the apostle to the Gentiles and Peter as the apostle to the Jews, right? And that's mm-hmm. the description.
Mm-hmm.
So could he just be strictly following the organizational lines and going with the top guys?
But Peter wouldn't really be, I mean, he was writing to Gentiles. He was writing to Greeks. The Corinthians were Greeks. So their contact with Peter would have been virtually nil. So I don't think that was part of the equation. All right. I think Peter was, in fact, the very first man to see Jesus alive.
Yeah,
and
I'm just throwing it out. I'm not saying I believe that.
Yeah.
It was a thought that just came.
Yeah. I think Paul had one thing in mind as he was penning that. And that was, I'm going to give a list of eyewitnesses that could be verified that would hold up in court. And what you do is you put the first one first, at least the important first one first, and then you list them in order. And he does list them in order. So that, my opinion is, he's listing them in chronological order, but he's only selecting what he considers to be the most important of the eyewitnesses. Because his whole purpose in writing that was to verify that Jesus had been raised from the dead, because there are still many living eyewitnesses who saw him. And you can actually go talk to them and interview them. All right. So anyway, let's move on to, I want to go over to John's account now. Before we do that, what happened next, after they returned back, the two disciples on the road to Emmaus, when they returned back and met with the others, we see that Jesus appeared there as well. So let's read that. But that's actually found in Luke and in John. And there are some things that John adds. So we're going to go to John in a minute. Verse 35. And they told about the things that had happened on the road and how he was known to them in the breaking of bread. Now, as they said these things, Jesus himself stood in the midst of them. Now, some people, they take that to mean that Jesus magically appeared, just poof, out of thin air, stood in the midst of them. But if you read John's account, it says that Jesus came, or he arrived, and then he stood in the midst of them. All right, so John clearly has him actually, coming through the door. But Luke's account, it seems a little more mysterious, but it doesn't eliminate that either. All right. Anyway, now as they said these things, Jesus himself stood in the midst of them and said to them, "Peace to you." And they were terrified and frightened, and supposed they had seen a spirit. Now, why were they terrified and frightened because he just appeared out of thin air? Or were they terrified and frightened because the last time they saw him, he was dead? I think it's the latter. All right. Now, when it says they suppose they had they had seen a spirit, what are they saying? What is he saying here? What is a spirit? Some people say they thought that they saw Jesus' ghost, and therefore Jesus, this passage proves that Jesus has a ghost. What is a spirit in the Bible? Yes, but it's used in three different ways. It's used of wind, it's used of breath, and it's used of angels and demons. Angels and demons. Is it ever used of a ghost? No. Never in the Bible is it ever used of a ghost. All right. So what they thought they were seeing was an angel at first. And he said to them, "Why are you troubled? And why do thoughts arise in your hearts? Behold, my hands and my feet, that it is I myself. Handle me and see, for a spirit or an angel doesn't have flesh and bones as you see I have." Well, this tells us a lot about Jesus in his resurrected form. Was he really the same Jesus, the same body that was put in the tomb? Was it really the same body? Does this verse prove it? Not really. It only proves that it was a physical body. Doesn't prove it was the same body. But John's gospel says that he showed them the holes in his hands and in his side. And he said, you know, and he did that to Thomas as well a week later. All right, so the body still had the marks of the crucifixion. And that proves that the body was the same body that was buried in the tomb. Okay? That's an important point. All right, so when he had said this, he showed them his hands and his feet. Verse 41. But while they still did not believe for joy and marveled, he said to them, "Have you any food here?" So they're still thinking he's an angel, I guess. And so they gave him a piece of broiled fish and some honeycomb, and he took it and ate it in their presence. What was the purpose of him eating in their presence?
To show them
that he's not, you know, an angel or some immaterial apparition of some kind. He took physical food that they knew was real food because they cooked it. And they gave it to him, and he ate it and consumed it in front of them. Now, only a physical person can consume physical food like that, at least in this case. So he ate it in their presence, and that was to prove to them that he was, in fact, raised from the dead and just was not appearing as, you know, an angel or something else. These are the words which I spoke to you while I was still with you, that all things must be fulfilled which were written in the law of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms concerning me. And he opened their understanding that they might comprehend the scriptures. And he said to them, "Thus it is written, and thus it was necessary that for the Christ to suffer and to rise from the dead the third day, and that repentance and remission of sins should be preached in his name to all nations, beginning at Jerusalem. And you are witnesses of these things. Behold, I send the promise of my Father upon you, but tarry in the city of Jerusalem until you are endued with power from on high." Now we'll stop there in this gospel because, you know, Luke actually leaps ahead several weeks in the last verses. Let's go to John now, chapter 20. And John gives us a couple of more instances where Jesus appeared. In John 20, verse 19, we have the same account we just read in Luke where Jesus appeared to them that evening. This was right after the two on the road to Emmaus had returned. It says, verse 19, "Then the same day at evening, being the first day of the week, when the doors were shut, where the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews, Jesus came," and it says he came and stood in their midst. The word "came" is the normal word for he just arrived in the normal fashion. Okay? All right. "He came and stood in their midst and said to them, 'Peace be with you.' And when he had said this, he showed them his hands and his side." That's the part Luke leaves out. And I think John put that in there to make sure people understood that there was no doubt that this was the same Jesus. Then the disciples were glad when they saw the Lord. So Jesus said to them again, "Peace to you. As the Father has sent me, I send you." And when he had said this, he breathed on them and said to them, "Receive the Holy Spirit." If you forgive the sins of any, they are forgiven. If you retain the sins of any, they are retained. Now, we could probably spend two lessons at least on this breathing on them, but we're going to reserve that for when we talk about Pentecost, all right, which will be coming up in a couple of weeks. So we'll go into that later. So this is one Sunday. Now it says, verse 24, "Now Thomas, called the twin, one of the 12, was not with them when Jesus came. The other disciples therefore said to him," so that is to Thomas, "We have seen the Lord." So he said to them, "Unless I see in his hands the print of the nails, and put my finger into the print of the nails, and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." Then after 8 days, now you have to understand, after 8 days means the next Sunday in the Jewish way of counting, all right? Because it counts the first day as well. It counts the first Sunday and the second Sunday. So after 8 days, the disciples were again inside, and Thomas with them. Jesus came, the doors being shut, and stood in the midst. And again, it says he came and then he stood. And said, "Peace to you." Then he said to Thomas, "Reach your finger here and look at my hands. And reach your hand here and put it into my side. Do not be unbelieving, but believing." And Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Jesus said to him, "Thomas, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." And that is us, isn't it? We haven't seen him in the flesh resurrected, but we are willing to believe the eyewitness accounts of who actually did see him, that is the apostles. Verse 30, "And truly Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples that are not written in this book, but these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name." After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias. Now, what does anybody know where the Sea of Tiberias is? Okay, it's the Sea of Galilee. It's the same sea. The Romans called it the Sea of Tiberias because of Tiberius, their ruler, but it was the Sea of Galilee. It's the same one. Now, all these other appearances are down in Judea, right, around Jerusalem. And now here we are, the Sea of Galilee is way up in Galilee, up in the northern part, which is a good, you know, couple of days travel away. So they're a long ways off. Anyway, it says, in this way he showed himself. And then it talks about Peter fishing in the boat, and Jesus was, you know, standing on the shore and cooking fish, and they came and joined him and so forth, right? Matthew, I'm going to close with this last one. In Matthew, the last few verses in Matthew's Gospel also tell us that Jesus showed himself to the disciples in Galilee, which is almost certainly what Paul was referring to when he says that he was seen by 500 brethren at once. Most of Jesus' followers were up in Galilee, by the way. Those who believed on him. Many people believed on him when he went around ministering, and he spent most of his time in Galilee. And he had a large following up there, apart from the 12. So it says, verse 16 of Matthew 28, "Then the 11 disciples went away into Galilee to a mountain which Jesus had appointed for them. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted." Now, does that mean that some of the 12 doubted? Probably not. This probably is referring to those 500 that Paul's talking about. "And Jesus came and spoke to them, saying, 'All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you. And lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age.'" Now, Matthew and Mark and John do not mention Jesus' ascension to heaven. They just end with him showing himself to his disciples. Luke tells us that he was caught up into heaven, and Acts, the beginning of Acts, goes into much more detail on that, and we're going to look at the ascension next time. Any questions on the resurrection or Jesus showing himself after his resurrection. Yes, Jennifer.
Any of the 500 ever anything?
Not that we are aware of. Paul simply mentions them, that, and he said many of them are still alive to this day when Paul wrote that. So obviously his point was that you can actually, you know, we can give you a list of names if you want to go verify it, you know, and actually talk to people who saw him when he was alive. Did Jesus show himself to anyone other than those who had been his followers? What's that? He did not. Because remember when at the Last Supper, actually it was at the supper before the Last Supper, but that's all right, the second to the Last Supper. He said, in a little while, he's talking to them, and he says, in a little while, the world will see me no more. But you will see me because I live. He's going to be raised from the dead. And there are no accounts anywhere in either the Bible or in any other historical document where anyone saw Jesus alive after his crucifixion, except those who had already believed on him, those who had already been his followers. And we know that there were well over 500 of those, according to the Apostle Paul, at that time. He did not show himself to any unbelievers, only to believers. All right? Any other? Yes. Now, I thought that question might actually come up. Yes, in Luke's account, it says he came back and he appeared to the eleven, while they sat, you know, for dinner after the two on the road to Emmaus. But then in John's account, it says that Thomas wasn't present, so that would make 10, not 11, because Judas was gone, right? The reason it's that way is the title, the 12 or the 11 after Judas. Left, that was kind of a title that was used of the whole group, like collectively as a group, not so much counting their numbers. If Thomas wasn't there or if John wasn't there, they would still be referred to the 11 as a group of people because it was kind of like a title that the whole group went by. They were a special class of Jesus' disciples, the ones whom he had personally chosen and had personally appointed. And so they went by that. In fact, as you read the book of Acts, you'll hear them talking about the 12. But the 12 weren't always present when they talk about the 12. It simply means that group of original apostles that Jesus chose. All right. So the name was changed from the 12 initially to the 11 after Judas betrayed him. And then later back again to the 12. All right. That's the only way to account for it. Yes.
Comment and a question.
Mm-hmm.
The two guys on the road to Emmaus, when they were sitting having supper with Jesus, the moment he broke the bread, their vision was unrestrained, and they recognized him. I think it's probably not an accident that it was the breaking of the bread symbolic of his crucifixion that happened.
Yeah. And they had seen him do it so many times before.
Yeah. The question has to do with Luke being one of the two. You know, this is a letter that he wrote to Theophilus. I think,
yes.
Right? So in the very first few verses of chapter 1, he uses the first personal pronoun me. It seemed to me a good idea to write all these things down. Why then would he not, in the account of those two on the road to Emmaus, why wouldn't he use us instead of they? He switches from me to as if he wasn't those two people.
That's a really good point. And I don't have an answer for it. It may be that Luke was not one of those two. Again, that's just what some commentators say. I'm just reporting that. So I don't know if it was Luke or not. But if it was Luke, then yeah, you do have that question. Because in Acts, whenever he was present, he always says us or we, as opposed to them or they. So, that might be a good reason to say that it was not Luke. So, we'll just leave that one kind of hanging out there. I don't think we really can resolve it at all. So, yeah.
Will we have the same body, same looks, if we are resurrected?
Well, generally speaking, yes. But we're going to be made new, that is perfect. So all of our defects will be gone.
Praise God.
All right? All of our defects will be gone.
Will envy still be around, comparing yourself?
I don't think so. That's sin, and that's the whole point of God is that he's doing all this stuff is to get sin out of his creation. So no, I don't think envy is going to be an issue at all. So no, not among God's people. Yeah. All right, anything else? We're good to go? All right.